Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, that's the Big Dog Hunt. Welcome, everybody, to another action-packed football week of third-level analysis of the NFL landscape. Callous Remarks with Joe Stazak and Steve Callous. We're going to look back at Week 16, look ahead to Week 17. It is December 27, 2016, the final show of 2016 from a man, Steve Callous, and myself. And without further ado, here he is, the superstar of the show that makes it all go. Steven, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. I wouldn't go that far, but I'm looking forward to this as always.
Always a good time, my friend. A lot of drama in week 16, Stephen, and we'll get to some of the news of the day. You know, Rex Ryan ousted as coach of the Buffalo Bills and whatnot. But a lot of injuries at the quarterback positions. Six teams made the playoffs this past weekend, including the Giants, who lost to the Eagles, but they did get in, the Chiefs, the Steelers, the Falcons, the Dolphins, and the Texans. Interestingly enough, in the AFC, those quarterback injuries, the unfortunate injuries, have left really Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, and Alex Smith as the viable quarterbacks to take the AFC. But again, anything can happen. That's why they play the game. Let's start with the Eagles and Giants, two teams close to your heart, close to my heart. At least one of them is close to your heart. The other one's close to my heart. I know we're texting each other. An interesting game. The Giants had a chance to clinch with a win. Statistic-wise, 470 yards for the G-men to 286 by the Eagles. They owned the time of possession by 10 minutes. But two major stats really stood out. Three turnovers to one, Giants to Eagles, and the red zone, the Giants is 1 of 5. They haven't done a lot of scoring in the last 4 weeks, 14 points, 10 points, 17 points, 19 points. Any concerns going forward from this offense in your point of view, Steven?
Yeah, big concerns. I mean, again, Victor Cruz never came back as Victor Cruz. I thought this year they'd have a dominant offense. Haven't really gotten a rushing game. Offensive line is okay, certainly not great. Lots of concerns. And I don't know why on the final possession, with all the mistakes you've just talked about with picks and bad in the red zone, I mean, literally that last possession, they were just dinking and dunking, and they wound up trying to throw the ball, you know, 50 yards downfield the last two plays. And if the last play wasn't picked, they would have thrown it 50 yards downfield on the final play. So I don't know why you wouldn't throw the ball down the field earlier. You weren't playing for a field goal. You had to get the ball in the end zone. And I would have been a lot happier if they would have thrown the ball 20 yards down the field a few times, even if it had gotten picked off. Because at the end, to me, it looked like he was just throwing it up for grabs, essentially. Maybe he had Beckham maybe a little spot there and just made a bad throw. But Eli's Eli. We can only hope he becomes Superman in the playoffs, as he has two other times. But when you look at him, look, 38 for 63. People are now intelligent enough. Years ago, nobody understood it. You throw 60 passes, you're not winning. That's not a good sign. And, in fact, they put up the stat towards the end of the game that since 2000, teams that have thrown 60 or more passes since 2000 are 3-27. It's happened 30 times. So that's really all you need to know. But in the past, people would go nuts. Oh, he was 35 for 60 for 380 yards. Yeah, but that means you lose. So I think people understand that now, and this is just the latest example of that. I should mention Beckham, you know, you probably saw that stat. He tied Lance Allworth as the fastest player ever, fastest wide receiver to get 4,000 career yards. That was in 42 games. And for the young people out there, if you don't know Lance Allworth, hopefully they have some video on him on YouTube, because he was an awesome receiver as well. And I think someone should go watch him, because Lance Allworth is one of my all-time favorites. But, hey, give the Eagles credit. You know, Wentz wasn't much, 13 for 24 for 152. Malcolm Jenkins with those two picks, including the pick six. But, you know, from a look-at-the-game perspective, the Eagles finish are 5-2 at home, 1-7 on the road. So the Eagles, you know, played well at home. And I don't know. I wanted to ask your opinion because on the game, Tirico kept saying, oh, everyone in Philadelphia is convinced that Wentz is the guy. He's the future. Is that true? Because I don't have that sense personally. I don't watch him as much as you. But is he viewed down there to be absolutely the guy?
No, I don't. And I think that after game three, slowly but surely, I think the confidence level has diminished greatly. I mean, there are still some folks out there that just believe it's, you know, the rookie year and he doesn't have any help around him. And I do get some of that. And certainly the coaching decisions have come into question. I'll ask you a question about that in a moment. But I think it's now kind of split. Before it was everyone was on board. And, of course, you know, he was the next Tom Brady, and there were going to be rings like you've never seen before in this town, even though there hasn't been one yet since 1960, way before the Super Bowl era started. But, no, from my standpoint, I don't think so. Let me put it this way. I don't think that he's a lock to be the guy. I like his skill set. I like some of the things he does. He's a rookie. But you look around at some of the other rookies, and I know you can say that they have more around them. Dak Prescott's certainly an anomaly, but, you know, he's really wilted Carson Wentz. And there have been times that forget about who he has around him, forget about the offensive. There's been some times where he's had certainly plenty of time and certainly has made the right decisions to throw to the spots he needs to throw. He's just been inaccurate at times. So, to me, that's the biggest concern. They're talking about completely changing his throwing motion. He doesn't have anyone to throw downfield to. I get all that. But some of the decisions he's made, really, you know, head-scratchers. And when he has had some opportunities to make plays, he's almost like feast or famine. You'll see him make a great throw, and then you'll see him on a 25-yard out, throw the ball 10 yards, you know, behind a guy or over his head. He's a little bit of a gunslinger, throws into coverage a lot. He tracks his receivers. A lot of that's rookie stuff, but it may have worked at North Dakota State. Doesn't work in the NFL, obviously. But I am certainly on the fence with Carson Wentz from what I've seen so far. And I don't think it helps with Doug Peterson at the helm. I never liked the hire, although after three games, maybe I'm wrong. I mean, this guy was,
boy,
he was great
good.
In the first three games. I mean, flawless. And I said, I was maybe really wrong about this guy. Okay, I don't think I'm wrong anymore. From what I thought, he gets – the thing is, he makes a mistake during the game, at least what I believe, and I think the majority of the reporters and fans believe is a mistake, and then they call him out on it, and I think clearly it's a mistake by all indications, the consensus. He doesn't back down. He then reiterates that he would do the same thing again,
right,
which makes it look worse. Sometimes you say, listen, yeah, I made a mistake. What do you say to that? You can't, like, hammer him anymore. I made a mistake. I did. Once you admit it, it kind of defuses everybody. But once you say, no, I would do it again, I'm cool with it. The one I'm talking about this past week is that Carson Wentz goes out with a head injury, and he went through a concussion protocol, and, you know, he got dazed a little bit. He comes in five snaps later. They run a reverse where he is the lead blocker.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
The lead blocker, and they asked him about that, and he said, his answers don't really make sense, to be honest. He said, we'd do it again. You know, he is supposed to block on that play. He took his man down. He took his own man down as well, tried to make a joke out of it. But I just don't think some of the things he does are that intelligent. Your thoughts on Doug Peterson from where your standpoint?
Well, as we've talked about in the past, sometimes these guys just outthink themselves. It would be dumb enough
yes.
to run a play where you have your quarterback coming out of the concussion protocol knowing he might block. Normally, in the old days, you just tell your quarterback to get the heck out of the way, but now it seems to be
yeah.
in some playbooks part of the play, so that's beyond stupid. It's right there with, you know, having your fake punting up 24-3
yeah.
and your punter gets
Pete
knocked
Carroll,
out.
Right.
Yeah, that's the play. We were looking to do it all game, and we had it, and as we talked about then, not that the Eagles might need it in the playoffs, but these are the kinds of plays, and we'll talk about the Dez Bryant touchdown pass. These are the kind of plays you want to save for like a really, really big spot. I don't know why you give those plays away. I didn't know Dez Bryant was lefty. I know we'll get to that game. But back to the Eagles.
I said the same thing. I was like,
right.
that was the thing that stood out to me, is he lefty.
Right, but back to the Eagles. Look, you got to be, a lot of guys just take the position, got to be stubborn. You know, I'm right, I'd do it again. Pete Carroll said it after he threw the interception in the Super Bowl. I mean, yeah, I'd do that again. So at some point, people say, you're an idiot, and you don't get that. So that's okay. But how you could even put your quarterback, whether you think he's the franchise guy or not, in harm's way later on in the game where you've been taken out to be looked at for a concussion, that's just beyond stupid. And, oh, by the way, what are the Eagles playing for? Okay, they're playing for pride, but this wasn't like they're playing for a playoff spot. And as for the Giants, the only final thing I'll say, and I don't want to be the complaining New York guy, but certainly on that final pass on the sidelines to Shepard, certainly he had one of his arms pulled. He was trying to catch that one-handed.
Awful.
Would that have changed
awful.
The game? It's the old you never know. But I have to say, more so than in recent years, and in recent years it's gotten bad. What happens when you have replay and super slow motion and 17 angles and challenges is you're going to see how many mistakes these guys do make, and they make a lot of mistakes. I understand that's part of the game to some degree, but my goodness, when you watch, if they go back 40, 50, 60 years and put the film on with the super technology they have now, I'm sure you'd find a ton of mistakes as well. To me, it's another... They don't have, as you know, full-time refs in the NFL. It's been a discussion for the last 5 years
sure.
now. A lot of the refs don't want to do it. Some of them are lawyers or whatever, and they don't want to give up their day
sure.
job, if you will. But I have to say, I don't see why they couldn't with the money, you know, the $10, $11, $12 billion a year industry. It seems to me if that would improve it 2 to 5%, it would be worth the investment. And I think it would, but we'll see what happens on that front. But this year, more than ever, to me, so many challenges and timeouts and injury timeouts. You know, all these things have to be reviewed. I think the NFL is going to review it because their ratings were down. I don't know how they've been the last few weeks. But certainly some changes have to be made in the presentation of the game. And we'll talk some other time about, you know, just playing football in general when you're 8, 10, 12, 14 years old, because that's going to have an effect on the game in 5 or 10 years as well, I think.
No, I completely agree with you, Steve. And again, Callous Remarks with Joe Stazag and Steve Callous, week 16, taking a look back, a look ahead to week 17. The boys keep their foot on the gas last night. They've already clinched home field. And the Lions certainly coming off a tough loss in at MetLife and needing to come up with a win. They're vying for the division title with the Packers, who've come on. They've won four straight. Of course, the showdown coming up this week in Detroit with the Packers. But tied at halftime, and then Dallas again, they pull away like they've been doing. Dak Prescott, 3 touchdowns, 212 yards. His numbers are never gaudy, but they're always solid. You know, he doesn't turn the ball over that much, and Dez Bryant really helped him out with a couple of sweet catches last night. And then there was that reverse, and you're right, they put it on tape. They've been working on it for a while. Dez is a lefty, which I didn't know, and, you know, it was well executed. I don't know why you do those things, and I don't know why. There's two different philosophies, and I'll get yours, Steve, that when you've already clinched, and I know you don't want to rest your guys too many weeks, but you risk an injury. Now, they won last night. Does it keep the winning attitude going and the winning spirit, and you're not getting rusty? But then there's it's always the rust versus rest factor. An impressive win last night, but certainly, and then they have one more game. Maybe Romo will see some snaps in the final game. But your thoughts on how that game was coached and the philosophy and who all played and how it played out?
Well, it's always, Belichick always played everybody, and then Welker got that terrible injury that one year, and
yep.
I think it's a
yep.
tough call, but I think it should be played more like the third exhibition game where you have these guys play a half, maybe into the third quarter.
Yep.
At some point, to me,
yep.
you want to get them out of the game. Now, the Lions were desperate, and I certainly liked the Lions getting 7.5. And
yeah,
at the beginning of the game, you thought it was going to be, you know, it was going to finish up 56-49 or something, the way it was going. People are going to put in the Lions tape against the Cowboys for the first few possessions because they went down the field like the Cowboys had 10 guys on the field. But the Cowboys went down the field like the Lions had 10 guys on the field for most of the game, and obviously that's why they won. But I really thought they'd give Romo some reps down the stretch. I was surprised.
I did too.
And I haven't heard any announcements that he's going to get them next week either, but they obviously it's early as we're doing this on Tuesday, but certainly you got to give Romo some reps, only because if Dak gets hurt, that would be the only way. I think even Jerry Jones understands that by now, but that would be the only way. But heaven forbid, you know, you saw what happened this week to Carr. I mean, I think Carr, as you know, I like the Raiders, but I think their season ended, you know, the notion that they're going to go win the playoff game. Now, if they can eke out a win and get home field advantage, maybe they will. But for all intents and purposes, winning the Super Bowl, I think, is off the table now for the Raiders. So you have to be aware of that, and we've just, you know, you've just seen it happen. So I don't know what the guys are thinking. I would think this week the Cowboys will play, I'm guessing, a half. You know, I don't know what you're going to say about this, but I'm sure you're going to talk about it. The Eagles are 6-point favorites over the Cowboys.
Right.
And I know the Eagles are
right.
going home, but the Cowboys are the Cowboys, and I don't even know if they're going to take their foot off the gas, but I would expect those guys to play like a half. I don't think, and maybe it's a fudge, but I don't think you totally want to sit them, especially if you're getting a bye than the Cowboys are, because then the next time they play, they haven't really played in 3 weeks. I don't think you want to play him a full game for the reasons you just talked about. I did notice a new chemistry, if you will, between Dak and Dez Bryant. That has not been around. Bryant missed a few games, but even when he was playing early on, he was not like the main target for Dak. And I did see a fascinating thing with Lewis Riddick on ESPN. I think he's the best of all of these guys. Whatever you think of anybody out there, I think Lewis Riddick is the best. And what he noted about the game was that for almost the first time all year, Dak was throwing down the field, throwing long routes, throwing long out routes where most of their play has been inside or short out routes. And it's a fascinating pickup by him, because if you think the Cowboys can now throw the ball down the field as they did, or throw deep outs as they did, then that gives them an added dimension just to the Dak Prescott short pass I might run if I don't have the short pass, and of course their great running game. So that vaults the Cowboys again with another Seattle backwards game, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, a mystery game to me. But that vaults the Cowboys clearly to the number one spot. I won't go off my Super Bowl pick, but I think if I could pick fresh today, I think now you have to rank Dallas over Seattle, even though we're all kind of hanging on to Seattle, and I think the Earl Thomas effect there has now frankly become obvious. But yeah, the Cowboys are for real. They're going to have home field advantage. I'd be shocked if they're not in the NFC Championship game, and I think if they are, they'll probably be the favorites at home.
No, I completely agree with you. I've bought into Dallas. It took me 15 weeks, but okay. They won a meaningless game by 21 points over a team that needed the win. God bless them. You know, what can I say? You got to tip your cap. Now, let's talk about Seattle. You just mentioned the Seattle Seahawks. Russell Wilson throws 4 touchdown passes, no picks at home, and they lose. They lose to the Cardinals. Stephen Hauschka missed another extra point. He also had a field goal blocked. I don't know if you can carry him into the playoffs. I mean, his head, you know, kickers are like goaltenders, in my opinion. You know, they can be ultra confident, but once that goes, there's a problem. There's a problem with his confidence. And but having said that, they lose to the Cardinals, who were 5-8-1 coming into the game. Seattle's now 9-5-1, 7-1 at home. That was their only loss at home this year. But Seattle hasn't been all that consistent in the last few weeks. Again, 5 points. I think they scored against Tampa. They gave up 38 then to the Packers. Then they win a big game against Carolina, and then they lose at home to the Cardinals. I mean, I like Seattle too, but I'd be a little concerned at their instability down the stretch here.
Oh, no question. I mean, I don't even know what to say. Earl Thomas is Earl Thomas, I guess. I understand he's great, but they're just not the same defense without him. And as good as Wilson and the offense played, you're right, 29 for 45 for 350, 4 touchdowns, no picks.
Wow.
How can they lose at home and lose to Arizona, frankly? Again, not that Arizona is bad. The interesting thing to me was, even if Hauschka, and I think you have to go with him, I don't know who you can pick up, you know, this late in the season, but the interesting thing is, so he makes the extra point and they're up 1. Arizona marched down the field anyway, and Canizero
and kicked the field goal, right?
43-yard game, and that was shocking to me as I'm watching the game. I'm like, oh, this is overtime. So that's another mystery. I should point out, I'm a huge David Johnson fan. He doesn't get the pub he deserves, but he's the first guy. The only other guy is Barry Sanders. They're the only two guys in the history of the NFL who have 100-plus yards from scrimmage in 15 consecutive games. And I hear talk now for David Johnson as MVP. I love David Johnson, but this is like giving MVP to A-Rod when he was on Texas and they were, you know, whatever they were. They had like 73 wins and he won the MVP. It's not MOP. I have this conversation a lot and I've written articles.
Right.
If you want to give it to the best player, you can make a case for David Johnson as the best player in the league this year. You can. But call it the MOP then. Don't call it the MVP. Call it the most outstanding player. And it just infuriates me because it just happens from time to time. You know, go back to baseball. Ernie Banks in the late 50s when the Cubs were like a 7th or 8th place team. Andre Dawson in the 80s when the Cubs came in last. I can't give you the football ones off the top of my head because I don't think football guys who are on, you know, sub-500 teams win the MVP. They just don't. But he might be the best player. He's certainly one of the most dynamic and dangerous players. And he flew under the radar this year because they were terrible. And a lot of people, thankfully not me, but a lot of people thought they were going to the Super Bowl. And you got to worry about Larry Fitzgerald, as great as he is, because all he wants to do is be in the Super Bowl. Clearly thought he had a shot this year, as did many people, and clearly had no shot after half the season, frankly. I don't know if Larry Fitzgerald is going to keep playing. He's a very bright guy. I think he has some concerns. I haven't heard him speak about it, but I certainly think he has some long-term concussion health problems. Not that he has them, just worried. You just don't know. These guys are waking up 30 years later, and they don't know where they are. So all of these guys take a lot of hits, and I think that's a problem that Larry Fitzgerald is actually thinking about. But very disappointing if you like Seattle, and I don't have the answer because Earl Thomas isn't coming back, and I don't know if they can – you know, they even – this was turned into a shootout in Seattle, and they lost a shootout in Seattle. So if and when they have to go on the road, and they will if they win, you know, like their first game, assuming they even get home field, that's going to be a problem. I've always said Seattle's defense travels, and it hasn't traveled the end of this season, and it didn't even make it home the other day, on Sunday.
Well, let me ask you, you mentioned David Johnson in his second year. He had a very good rookie year. I remember he had an incredible run against the Eagles. He torched the Eagles last year in a game at the Link. 85 players were selected before he was. He's out of Northern Iowa, same college that Kurt Warner went to. And I'm looking at Tyreek Hill, and I had this conversation with my dad the other night. I was, you know, he's in Florida. I was talking to him. He was watching the Chiefs game. I said, you got to take a look at number 10 during this game. I said, watch Tyreek Hill in this game. He's the most dynamic. 2 seconds later, he busted like a 59-yard run, and I said, did I tell you? He goes, well, when was he? I said, he was a fifth-round pick out of West Alabama. He's like, well, how come 164 other, you know, draft picks went by and teams did not select him? Now, I'm going to ask you that because this guy is as fast as I've ever seen a player. I mean, he's just explosive. I mean, there might be some that on par with him back in the day, currently DeSean Jackson. There's some speed burners out there. He's certainly one of them. But how come he lasts to the fifth round if he's this explosive? I'm assuming he was this explosive at West Alabama. David Johnson, kind of the same thing. I mean, a lot of teams, you know, pass on him for whatever reason. But how do you miss on Tyreek Hill? How does he last to the fifth round?
I think it has to be small college, and they just didn't think that he could measure up. Not a big guy, but I think they said he ran like a 4.25, which is really, you know, you hear 4.3, 4.4, you're like, oh, wow, 4.25 is off the chart. I have to think that's what it is. And, you know, all these teams are probably going back to their book and say, yeah, we might want to draft 4.25 guys or higher. But you're right. This guy is an incredible weapon. And when he ran for that 70-yard touchdown in this game, another, you know, monster Tyreek Hill run, that was the longest play from scrimmage for the year for KC. And then a little later, Travis Kelce caught that bubble screen and somehow ran it 80 yards for a touchdown, and that became the longest. And this is against Denver. So, again, I know Denver's not Denver. I viewed it more as Trevor Siemian, not quite the guy. They couldn't score. But keep in mind, of course, they won the Super Bowl last year with very poor quarterback play, whatever you think of Peyton Manning. He was poor last year. And you know, Osweiler was fortunate. Seven games got him $72 million. Now he's on the bench. But they had kind of the same setup this year. I think that's what they were hoping for, and it hasn't worked out. But for their defense to get torched on those two plays, which, of course, also knocked them out of the playoff chase,
yes,
is really telling for Denver and certainly hopeful for Kansas City. Alex Smith also showed he can run a little. He didn't run much early in the year. He had that rushing TD early in the game. He can do that. So I think KC is a big factor. I'm a quarterback guy. I assume you are. You know, it's really, as you said before, Brady,
sure,
and Big Ben and Alex Smith to a lesser degree, but he's a proven quarterback. I think those – look, I think the Patriots kind of lay over the field now. Do I think the Steelers could go into Foxborough and give them a game? Yeah, but I thought the two teams that could really give them a game in Foxborough, neither are in the playoffs now, the Ravens – this is based on past performance, of course – the Ravens,
sure,
and Denver, and both of them are not in. So I think the Patriots would rather see even a better Chiefs team who they thrashed last year. And I always said, as did my son, who knows more about the Patriots than me, that, you know, the one guy you have to be afraid of with who's left is Big Ben. Going into even going into Foxborough, no matter what Terry Bradshaw said about Tomlin, I hope we talk about that. What an idiot Terry Bradshaw,
yeah,
is to think this guy is a cheerleader when you have,
right,
the Steelers, who have had, what, three coaches in 40 years or whatever the heck it is.
Right.
This guy is certainly as good as Bill Cowher, who lost so many big games.
Yep.
Cowher got his Super Bowl, and good for him, but he won so many big games. I'm
finally
sure he's happy on TV.
14th year.
Yeah,
yes.
For Terry Bradshaw to say that about Tomlin, who is a top, top coach, is just stupid. And you got to wonder, you know, is he losing his mind a little? Does he just want to be relevant and say something controversial? But it's very sad to hear a guy maligned like that because Tomlin's a top coach.
I was going to ask you that because the only thing I could think of is sometimes when people get older, they tend to, like you said, lose their mind a little bit, and they say things, especially like athletes that are protective of their era. I remember Oscar Robertson last year talked about,
right,
you know, hey, back in the day, we could have played defense. We could have D'd up Steph Curry. Whatever he was talking about.
That's what,
like,
he was talking about.
Their head,
right,
like the RCA dog, like, what? And Terry Bradshaw then comes out. Now, this is his team, too. I mean, I know he has four rings. He probably feels entitled to say whatever he wants. But Mike Tomlin, nine seasons, six of them he's been to the playoffs. Seven of them have been 10-win seasons. He's gone to two Super Bowls. He's won one. He's very gracious, too, when he kind of gave his rebuttal, you know, because he basically kindly and graciously said, it borders on disrespect when you know, she start talking about a cheer. I mean, he really deserves more respect than that. So what do you think about it? Do you think it's when guys get older and they get a little bit more, because it happens with other people too, believe me. And when I'm around, like, older folks or elderly people, you kind of scratch your head and say, where is that coming from?
I think he's trying to protect his era to some degree, but maybe he's a big fan of Cowher. If you ask me who I want to coach my team, Tomlin or Cowher, over the last 15 years, they're equal, you know, both of their records being considered, I'd take,
sure,
Tomlin in a heartbeat. You know, I don't think anybody's going to say that better
too
than Chuck Knoll. I don't know if,
right,
he feels,
sure,
he has to knock Tomlin down, because Tomlin is good, but he's won one Super Bowl, and you get one nowadays, right? That's a big deal because there's so many more teams. It's so competitive than in the days of Terry Bradshaw, frankly. And I'm not knocking the Steelers. Those teams were great, but you know they were one of the Steel Curtain. They were one of the greatest defenses of all time. So Tomlin,
oh, yeah,
easily could have taken a few shots at Terry Bradshaw, who you recall was viewed to be an idiot quarterback in the 70s. That,
yes,
was not a joke. People thought he was stupid. And I don't think he,
yep,
was, don't get me wrong. But
no,
I think Tomlin kind
of
took the high road. But I think the reaction has been almost unanimous that Bradshaw's stupid for saying that, and most people have to say that Tomlin is an excellent coach, because he is an excellent coach. So yeah, it's very disappointing that guys say that, but I also think you want to stay relevant, as they say, and say something controversial, but you really shouldn't venture into saying something stupid. And that's what Terry Bradshaw,
yes,
did. You know, I never watched those shows anymore, but I would probably tape it just to hear what, if anything, he says. I don't know that he'll apologize, and I don't think Tomlin cares. I mean, Tomlin really is a we do what we do. We don't care what anyone else does.
Yeah.
And you got to like that about him. So we'll see if Bradshaw tries to at least temper his statements. But it was just you look at him now and you just shake your head. What a stupid statement. And I think it's been almost unanimous. I haven't heard anyone remotely agree. And it's been talked about in New York Sports Talk, I can tell you that, and nobody really agrees. Tomlin, I think Tomlin's a better coach than Bill Cowher, myself. And I don't think either of them are Chuck Knoll, but who is? So, you know, that it,
yep.
It's very sad that it came out like that. It's the old you should think before you speak. You should think before you hit the send button on the stupid fill-in-the-blank tweets or emails that we now have today. And I think a lot of people just don't think. But I don't know if he said it. If he said that to anyone in the room, I'm going to say this about Tomlin. Presumably they would say, what, you're out of your mind. But maybe he is out of his mind. You just don't know.
Yeah, it's possible. Steve Callis and Joe Stazak. Callis from Marks with Joe Stazak and Steve Callis. About 15 minutes left in the show. Speaking of the Pittsburgh Steelers, they come from 10 down in the fourth quarter, 3 touchdowns, 21 points in the fourth quarter, including a late one. Ben Roethlisberger, as you mentioned, he is a guy who can slay some dragons. And with everyone who's dropped out in the AFC, in terms of the quarterbacks, the Dolphins lose Ryan Tannehill. Derek Carr, we mentioned, is out. Marcus Mariota went down. You got Tom Brady. You got Ben Roethlisberger left. You got Alex Smith. You know how I feel about the Chiefs and who they're coached by. I like the Steelers and the Patriots for my money, and I love Big Ben as a quarterback. What holes do the Steelers have? I mean, they had some up and downs. They got whacked in Miami. They got whacked by the Eagles in Week 3, but they're starting to come along, and that's no easy task coming from 10 points down in the fourth quarter to anybody. But they do have Ben. They have Le'Veon Bell, who's healthy and not suspended, you know, this time of the year. He's usually suspended at the beginning of the year. But so they have Antonio Brown. Like, what do they lack? Where are their holes? And what can teams exploit on the Pittsburgh Steelers going into the playoffs?
Yeah, I think their holes are defensively, and give the offense credit for doing what they did against the Ravens, a very good defense. But you know, Joe Flacco had that one excellent year and got his $100 million, but to me, he's not an elite quarterback. Yet they still put up 27 against the Steelers. So I think their problems are all defensively, which is interesting because 3, 4, 5 years ago, they were a defensive team. That first Super Bowl that Big Ben won, he played one of the worst Super Bowls in the history of the world. It was all defense.
Yes,
and really, I'm not going to knock Terry Bradshaw here, but if you go back to those teams, they were basically the steel curtain, you know, and they had Franco Harris, and they had Lynn Swann, and they had John Stallworth, and they had Bradshaw. But basically, it was defense won championships, and still that's true to a large degree. Even nowadays. So I think they're, you know, I think if they're going to win, if they're going to beat the Patriots, for example, I think that's going to be a shootout game. I don't think they'll beat the Patriots, but I do think they have a chance. They might go along with kind of the Ravens and the way they've played in Foxborough and Denver. Of course, Denver's kind of better at home against the Patriots, but they've beaten the Patriots in Foxborough as well. I think Pittsburgh has a chance. I don't think Kansas City has turned it around enough. They got thrashed 30-7 last year, and yes, they're better this year, but they're still going back to Foxborough, so I don't think they're going to reverse that kind of differential. So I agree. It'll be Big Ben. It'll be the offense. When you look at the big three, as they always say, the QB, the best running back, the best wide receiver, Big Ben, Le'Veon Bell, and Antonio Brown. I mean, I don't know if it gets better than that, frankly. I don't know if the Patriots, I don't think they're better than that in that big three. But again, you got to go to the defensive side of the ball. And I think if Pittsburgh could score against New England and New England, I think Tom Brady's going to score more against Pittsburgh and New England. And I was kind of surprised that the Ravens would give it up like that, frankly. But they did. Maybe it's the old they scored too early, you know. They scored a minute and 18 left, and that's like too early. And one final thought. When Antonio Brown catches that ball on the one or the half, if he doesn't get the ball over the goal line, and what a play that was, he took a real hit and still got the ball over, the clock runs out. There was like 8-9 seconds left, and they're not getting to the line to spike or run another play in 8-9 seconds. I don't even think the ball would have been down would be put down by the refs. So that was a fantastic play by Antonio Brown, who only, you probably saw this, that he and Marvin Harrison are the only guys to have four straight seasons of 100 receptions. And that's not to demean wide receivers of the past, because if a lot of them played today, the superstars back then, they would have that. It's such a passing league now compared to the way it used to be. But, you know, two guys have done it, and Antonio Brown is one of them. But that was an unbelievable play to win the AFC North. If he makes the play, they win it. If he doesn't make it, they don't. So give him a lot of credit. That was an unbelievable play.
It was tremendous. And I did want to talk about another game, a game coming up this week. It's the marquee game. It's the night game. But I also want to talk about what they did this past week, because the Green Bay Packers, don't look now, they've won five in a row. They're coming on again.
Kidding.
Aaron Rodgers is balling again. The last five games, 27 points, 21 points, 38 points against that Seattle defense, 30 against Chicago with that Jordy Nelson 60-yard pass and field goal at the end of the game. And then they beat the Vikings 38-25. That's the hottest team in the league right now. And then you have Detroit. It was 9-4 and rolling along. And this is one of those where you're thinking to yourself, same old Lions, same old Packers. We kind of know the outcome before it's going to happen. But I'm not so sure about this one, just because I think it looks like everyone wants to, you know, coronate the Packers before the game is played. Your thoughts on the Packers and Detroit, what the Packers did this past weekend, how Detroit is now stumbling a little bit, and what do you look for in the game this Sunday?
Well, the problem for the Lions is they're decimated in the secondary, and I think obviously that's going to play right into the Packers' hands.
Slay.
Yep. I think I'm probably going to pick the Packers. I guess I have like 3 minutes to change my mind. But you're right. The line is Packers three over the Lions, and you're like, well, Lions at home, but the Packers are on such a roll. The Aaron Rodgers, Jordy Nelson connection, which was not there at the beginning of the season. I'm sorry. They were not good.
No.
Is there. I don't know if you heard the whole Viking thing where the DBs decided to go against Mike Zimmer and not listen. He wanted Rhodes to guard him the whole game, but they just stayed on their side of the field.
Yes.
And he had like 150 yards and two TDs in the first half and 9 yards and no TDs in the second when they finally went back to doing what the coach wanted. I don't know how that happens in professional football, because if you saw it happen one play, you call timeout, you call the guys over, and you say, well, what the heck are you doing?
Right.
Xavier
you
Rhodes,
doing?
You go wherever Jordy Nelson goes, but that never, you know, now it's become a miscommunication, which is a load of garbage if you saw the Xavier Rhodes quote after that. Also, I was trying to call in to put a late pick on the Packers, because once the Vikings plane slid off the runway there,
yeah,
went into Green Bay. I love the Packers, but no, I think the Packers are for real. I think they're going to pick them. The Lions were disappointing, obviously. You know, they're better at home, but they lost to the Giants, they lost to Dallas, and those are two very good teams. But I think the Packers are coming now. If you're looking for that team that's playing really well at the end of the season as they go into the playoffs, it's clearly
sure.
The Packers. I'm not thrilled with the line, but I think the Packers will win the game, because it always seems that Aaron Rodgers finds a way and Matthew Stafford doesn't quite. He did earlier this year.
Yep.
Remember that, you know, 7 wins when they were behind in the fourth quarter when they were 7-4. Can the Lions
yes.
win? Absolutely. But they disappointed me the other night in Dallas. I won't say they gave up, but, you know, they got outscored. Well, they got outscored 21-0 in the second half, or
20,
whatever it
21
was.
21 in the second half.
So, yeah, I think the Packers are for real. I'd be afraid to play them if I was Dallas or Seattle. But they still are an offensive-based team, and that always scares me in the playoffs.
You know, someone pointed out, in fact, our friend Steve Carell, my pseudo-agent, and your good friend, our good friend, I can't pronounce
Cervello,
his last
yeah.
name.
Cervello, yeah. Steve Cervello, yeah.
Thank you, Cervello.
Good guy,
he,
yeah.
He pointed out that there is a wild card scenario that has the Oakland Raiders playing the Houston Texans. This is Houston coming off that huge 12-10 win over the Bengals with Tom Savage at the helm. It could pit Tom Savage versus Matt McGloin in certainly a blockbuster wild card playoff. I mean, how's the NFL? What do you think the NFL's thinking in terms of how some of these matchups and how these quarterbacks are dropping like flies? And, you know, there's nothing you can do about it at this point, but do you think that will have any effect on the ratings if you're looking at that game saying, oh, really? What a mess.
I don't know, playoff games, you know, if you're a football fan, you're going to watch. If you're not a football fan, I really don't think you watch either until the conference finals or definitely the Super Bowl.
I agree.
So I still think it's the teams in the playoffs. It's still a big deal. Yeah, that's not obviously much of a matchup quarterback-wise, but, you know, these teams did make the playoffs. And we saw a team last year win with poor quarterback play. We've seen, you know, the 2000 Ravens win with poor quarterback play, with not a great quarterback. We saw Denver win the Super Bowl last year with poor quarterback play, so I don't think it's going to hurt them. I think the bigger question is there anything more they can do to protect the quarterbacks? They do so much now. I don't know if there's anything else they can do. In the old days, they would say, you know, put a dress on them and don't let anybody hit the quarterback, but we don't say those things anymore. But I don't see what more they can do. They've done so much. You can't hit them high. You can't hit them low. You know, so
right.
It's a tough. People are going to look at things differently now in football, I think, because it's such a dangerous sport. There's like 5 injury timeouts every game.
Yep, it's been bad. Any Jeff Hostetlers out there? I can't remember another team who won a Super Bowl where their starter was out and the backup came in and won a Super Bowl, and that was near and dear to your heart.
Absolutely.
Bill Belichick as a defensive coordinator, and they held Buffalo to like 19 minutes time of possession. But
yep.
Besides that, any of them out there, do you think?
I don't think there's any in this group, if that's what you're asking. I don't remember.
I agree with you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a tough thing. I guess we should get to the picks quickly.
I'm going to touch back.
I was no good last week. I was 0-3. I wish we had 45 minutes to talk about how the Jaguars, who loved Gus Bradley and were so terrible for Gus Bradley, turned it around against the Titans. I understand Mariota broke his fibula, but that, you know, they wouldn't have won the game if Mariota was healthy. So that's a mystery game to me. And the Seahawks were a mystery game to me. But I do want to mention one thing we'd be remiss if we didn't mention. And, you know, we could talk about Rex Ryan getting fired next week because that's like new. But the Browns finally win a game. I'm so happy. I almost picked them last week. I am going to pick them this week. But they were so happy. Joe Thomas, who has never missed like a game in Cleveland, and they've been terrible forever. He's like an all-pro every year. He's a Hall of Famer. He was crying after the game with Hugh Jackson, the coach. And when you see that, you understand it's not just we're going through the motions to get paid a lot of money.
Yeah.
So congratulations to them. But this week I'll go the Dolphins at home getting 9.5 against the Patriots. I don't know how the Patriots are going to play it, but Tom Brady always has trouble against Miami, in Miami. This is obviously not about the Dolphins' offense. I just think maybe they'll bring somebody else in. I don't know that the Patriots ever kill the Dolphins in Miami. You know, these are hard games to pick now because you don't know who's doing what.
Yeah,
but in the one game
exactly
where you
right.
do know who's doing what, I'm going to go Packers -3 over the Lions. I understand that's almost a trap bet because the Lions are good at home. They are playing for everything. There's ways if they lose they can get in. That has to go back to Washington. I like Washington, but I'm not going to pick them at 7.5 over the Giants. You know, that just doesn't sound right to me. So I'm going Packers -3 over the Lions, Dolphins getting 9.5 from the Patriots, and I'm going to take 7.5, the Browns against the Steelers off that win last week. I think they'll be on a week-long high, and the Steelers don't really need the game. I don't know what the Steelers are going to do, but those are my three. How about you?
Well, I went 2-1 last week. New England hooked me up again as they edged out the Jets 41-3. I had the Eagles over the Giants again. They play well at home. It's a division matchup. I thought the line was a little low. I had the Lions plus, like you did, plus 7.5. I got suckered into that one. I guess that line looked almost too good to be true, and it was. But
and it was
2-1 this week. This week, you mentioned Dallas getting a 6 at the link. I'll take that any day of the week. I think the Eagles could play their cheerleaders, and they should not be giving 6 points to the cheerleaders. They can't get out of their own way sometimes. I've seen Dallas. And I've seen teams that have nothing to play for with nary a guy you could identify, and
right,
then they
right.
come up big. you know, it's just amazing. All they have to do is keep it close. 13-2, and maybe they keep their foot on the pedal for a half. I'm going with Dallas plus 6. The Patriots, only because I take them every week, minus the 9.5, like you mentioned. And I'm going against your pick because I think if you polled the jury – everyone's going to be on the Packers just because history tells us to do that, and that's the sensible thing and the most commonsensical thing to do. But I'm going to go against the trend. This is the year Detroit gets it done. Whether they win or lose, I like the 3. I've seen 3.5, but I'll take the home dog there. So I got Dallas plus 6. I got the Pats minus 9.5. I got Detroit plus 3, 3.5, whichever way you go. And real quick, we won't talk till after the new year. We got the college playoffs this weekend. Who do you like real quick advancing to the title game? You got Alabama against Washington, and of course you have a Clemson Ohio State.
Yeah, I'll go Alabama-Clemson, and just to be different, I'll go Clemson to beat Alabama. They gave them a good run last year, and I think they got a little better at the end of the year. But Alabama is unbelievable, as always. They're the greatest dynasty in recent memory in college football, that's for sure.
They're incredible, and it's funny because we've something wrong here because we're thinking a lot alike on this one, too. I like Bama, and I like Clemson, even though I think Urban Meyer is one of the great coaches of our lifetime, and I think Clemson gets it done despite some struggles this year, and I think it's their year. You know, I thought they'd win last year. They did not. Bama does it again, and I don't know how they keep doing it in this year, but they did, and I like Clemson to win it all this year. Happy New Year, my friend. Great talking to you, as always. We'll catch you next Tuesday right here on Sportsology. He's Steve Callis. I'm Joe Stazek. Have a great weekend. Great week, everybody. Happy New Year. We got to go. Talk to you next week.